Hello, baseball fans, and welcome back to episode number 39 of the Roster Rhetorical. I've just noticed I've spelt it wrong in our little recording program here. I'm surprised no one here
roster
yelled at me for that yet.
I noticed it too.
You did? So as you can hear, I have a bunch of people with me. I have my co-host, as always, Matt Goldman. Matt, what's going on?
Not much. How about you?
And I've called in the reinforcements for the trade deadline. I've brought in MLB Daily Dish's own Chris Cotillo, mainly because I wanted to confuse Matt and have two Chris's on the show.
Yeah, I'm just really lost over here.
Chris, what's going on?
A little bit sick, really busy, but glad to join you guys.
How are you feeling? I noticed the other day you said you were sick in our offices.
Yeah, our virtual Slack room that serves as an office.
You don't have to tell the people that they're virtual.
A little bit under the weather, really a terrible time of the year for that to happen, but I'm getting through.
So yeah, busy week for all of us, especially you, I know, for sure. But it's good that we can get everybody here and sort of talk about the trade deadline as we are just a few days away from it coming on Monday. It is official. So I think the easiest place for us to start here, guys, is the trade that went down on Monday that we really haven't gotten a chance to talk about here on the show, and that is that the Cubs acquired Aroldis Chapman. They ended up giving, let me get all the players here in front of me, shortstop Gleyber Torres, right-hander Adam Warren, who's now going back to the Yankees, outfielder Billy McKinney, and outfielder Rashad Crawford. That is the package that is going back to New York in order for Chapman to go to the Cubs. Matt, let me kick it off with you. What are your initial thoughts about this deal?
I really don't like it at all. I know that the allure of a 105-mile-per-hour fastball and, you know, the best closer in the game can really make you do weird things. But to give up as talented a shortstop as Gleyber Torres is, who's only 19 and ranked, I believe, 27th on the latest Baseball America update, or 27th best prospect. And, you know, they gave up the other two guys that you mentioned who aren't huge prospects. I know Crawford, was that his name? Yeah, Rashad Crawford.
Yes.
He's had a pretty good last month or so. He's really turned it on. McKinney could develop into a solid MLB regular. I don't know if anyone's really expecting him to be a star. So Torres is really the main get. I think it's funny that they got Warren back, because if you look at the Castro trade, they really essentially got him for Brendan Ryan, who the Cubs immediately designated for assignment. But the Cubs are 55-1 heading into the ninth inning, and I believe if they have a lead going into the seventh, it's something still equally as incredible, you know, 56-5, something along those lines. So Chapman really doesn't help them too much. He doesn't really move up their win curve. Obviously, a bunch of people have been saying that this move was made for October, and I guess you can't really disagree with that, but it's just, to give up four guys, one of whom is a major league ready guy now in Warren. I know he didn't have great results with the Cubs, but he didn't just forget how to pitch. So it just seems like the Cubs gave up an awful lot for a guy that might not be around very long.
So, Chris, I'll go to you here because you're our insider. What has the industry said about this deal? Do they feel that it's an overpay, or do they feel that the Cubs did what they needed to do in order to put themselves in a position to win a World Series in October?
I mean, I think Mike Bates put it really well on the site yesterday. I mean, it's an overpay, but it's, if you're going to make an overpay, this is the time to do it. I think the Cubs are obviously in a different spot than any team is literally ever. You know, you have an 100-year World Series drought, and you're going to have to make aggressive moves. And I think there's like a sticker shock of seeing the number one overall prospect in the system getting traded, as well as a number five. But at the same time, the top guys in that system are all, you know, the top young players on that in that organization are all in the majors. You know, we forget that Chris Bryant, Addison Russell, Soler, Baez have only been in the majors for a year. It seems like a lot longer than that. But that really is the core of that team going forward, and it really allows them, especially with a guy like Russell blocking Torres at short, to make moves and deal from a farm system. So I think you're much more willing to give up a 19-year-old than someone like Bryant or Russell in that mold. And so for that, I think it's an overpay that makes sense at the moment.
I agree with most of that. The thing that I would say is that using the Russell is blocking Torres as a justification, I'm not a huge fan of, just because shortstops are so athletic in nature that Torres probably could have moved to the outfield if it was, you know, if that's what it came to. Russell is no guarantee at this point. I know everyone is in love with his talent, including myself. I think he's going to be deserving of the all-star shortstop, a phrase which, you know, he kind of lucked into this year. But the Giants kind of have a similar problem right now with Christian Arroyo. And if he forces the issue, then they'll put him, you know, in left field or right field. But to give up a guy that talented who's so young, who could undoubtedly adapt to multiple positions, I think that's where my biggest issue with it lies.
So now that the Yankees have moved Chapman and sort of signified that they're not going for it this year, or at least making this move does that, Chris, I'll ask you, are they open for business? Are guys like Ivan Nova, Andrew Miller, Beltran, are these type of guys available? Can teams acquire them right now?
I think you have to answer that question on a player-by-player basis. I mean, Brian Cashman came out yesterday and said, this is not our white flag. We just were blown away by an offer for a rental guy. And I think the sellers, even, you know, semi-sellers like the Yankees are right now, should always entertain getting a few young players back for a rental. I think Nova, in this market, has value, which he's been not good in the last few years if you just look at his stats, but still drawing interest based on who else is out there. So I think the Yankees are going to look to deal him, and maybe Beltran, obviously. Those are guys that are rentals. But at this point, I think Andrew Miller is probably there to stay. The Nationals are going to give up a lot to get someone like him or Wade Davis or another reliever. And I just don't know if they're going to be willing to pay the price. Like, the word is that they have their top four or five young players completely untouchable. That obviously includes Lucas Giolito and Trey Turner. I don't think they're willing to give those guys up at all for someone like Miller, someone like Wade Davis, and that might be what it takes for those guys to get moved. So in terms of the Yankees, it's not a full sale, but I think they're going to look at making moves. And if they can get controllable starting pitchers, that rumor kind of floated out there today, if they can get controllable starters, they might look to do that as well. So maybe a little bit of buying, a little bit of selling, but they're not going to be buying rentals, I wouldn't think, in the next couple of days.
I had a question that maybe I thought of it while you were talking about the prices for Miller and Davis. I read this article earlier today. I can't remember who it was by. I want to say it was JJ Cooper, talking about how with the deals that the Cubs made for Chapman, and then the Espinoza trade with San Diego, that the price that has been set is almost prohibitively high. Are people talking about, at least, you know, people that you've spoken to, are people kind of upset with what the Cubs paid for Chapman? I think Cooper's point was that whether it was part of their plan or not, they've made it incredibly hard for anyone to acquire controllable talent, considering what, you know, the Yankees got for 2 months of Chapman.
Right, no, I totally agree with that, and that's what a lot of scouts and front office people are saying, you know, and I've really heard it, especially after the Anderson Espinoza deal, I think even more than I've heard it, just because there's not that many starters available, and there are a few relievers available, so that just kind of dilutes it a little bit, but the starter thing, I mean, we haven't seen a starter come off the board since that, and that's been, what, 12 days, 2 weeks, so you're looking at guys like Andrew Kastner have a high price right now, just because San Diego saw where the market can go. I know Kastner is a lot worse than Pomeranz right now and is a rental, but there's been no starter moves, and I think the reliever market is going to thaw a little bit. And we're just going to see. I think a few reports surfaced today that most of this stuff's going to happen right up to the deadline over the weekend, and I think prices might drop as sellers get a little bit desperate at that point.
Does the same go for, let's say, the White Sox and Chris Sale and Jose Quintana? I mean, the price for them has to be astronomically high, especially after what they saw the Padres got for Drew Pomeranz. What's the likelihood of one of those guys getting traded, and if you had to pick, which one's more likely to get moved before Monday?
I mean, I think astronomically high almost doesn't do it justice for Sale. Or really Chris Archer or Sonny Gray. Gray's fallen off a little bit, as has Archer, but if we're talking just about Sale, I think, you know, the Dodgers' willingness to include Urias in that is a really interesting first step, but they're going to have to really add a lot of other names. And talking to executives with the club who's really going after Sale hard, they're asking for five top prospects. You know, I don't know if that's one through five necessarily or five guys in the top 10, but I was told it's five top level guys. And that's a price that it's going to be a lot higher than what the Rangers paid for Cole Hamels last year. It's going to be a lot higher, obviously, than what the Red Sox gave up for Pomeranz being just one player. And, you know, a lot higher than even the Yankees. Seems like an overpay yesterday, but that just is going to all pale in comparison to what a potential sale return would be. So I think there's only a few teams that could actually make a run at him. Obviously, the ones you're thinking of, the Red Sox, the Dodgers, and the Rangers. I think the Braves are an interesting dark horse there just because they have so much quantity of young pitchers and their pitching staff and their system, just based on, you know, the trades they've made in the last couple of years. So those are the teams really involved. I think the price for Quintana is going to be really high too. That's just where the market is. Like, you're looking at these rental guys, whether it be Rich Hill or Hellickson or Cashner or even Nova, are going to probably get a lot back just because there's no one available, and you're looking at a winter where there's also nobody available, and those are the best names. Clay Buchholz is probably a top 5 or 6 available starter. It really is insane when you think about it. So the prices are going to be really high, and I think if the White Sox find themselves really motivated by maybe an offer from the Dodgers or the Rangers, then they'll pull the trigger. But right now, it just seems like it could be slow on that front.
I would really love to see a Chris Sale trade just to see what the package would look like. It would probably be one of the best packages that's ever been offered for any one player. I saw the same thing about the 5 top prospects. So for the sake of the Rangers organization, I really hope they don't do it, because they'd have to give up Profar, Gallo, and I feel like Mazzara just to get a conversation started. And with the number of prospects they gave up for Hamels last year, I don't know if they could. I really don't think adding Sale for that price would really, turn them in the right direction. They need all those guys.
Not only has the pitching market really gotten slow, but the hitting market really isn't anywhere either. I mean, yes, the Blue Jays acquired Melvin Upton today in exchange for Hansel Rodriguez. Yes, Hansel Rodriguez, who is Toronto's 18th best prospect. He's going to go back to the Padres in the deal. But that's really all that we're seeing, and there is a bit of a stalemate there as well. I saw a tweet from Jerry Krasnick of ESPN that said that the Reds are starting to call up teams, and they're having conversations with 4 teams right now at least about outfielder Jay Bruce, and they're looking for at least one top prospect in return. And Jay Bruce is an older guy. He's going to turn 30 pretty soon. His defense isn't great in the outfield, and to ask for a top prospect in return for that, setting the bar that high really makes it hard for other deals to sort of be made. Chris, what do you think would be the breakthrough point for the offensive side of the market to really start to take shape and get moving?
Well, I think the outfield market is basically the exact opposite of the starting pitching market right now, just because, yes, both are slow, but you have just so many options available for outfielders. I mean, Melvin Upton is probably not among the top 10, 12, maybe 15 outfielders available this year, and that I think really speaks to kind of the depth there is in the outfield. Obviously, Bruce is one of the best guys available, but there's a lot of people that think Carlos Gonzalez and Charlie Blackmon are legitimately available in Colorado. You have Josh Reddick in Oakland. Ryan Braun has been talked about. I mean, there's a lot of players out there. Steve Pierce is a guy drawing a lot of interest as a first base, potentially outfield option. So there are a lot of guys that are out there, and that really is going to bring the ask price down. I think what Toronto had to give up for Melvin Upton today was not that much. You know, they have to give up, I believe it's paying him $5 million, right, over the next...
They're paying him $5 million throughout the duration of his contract, and then they only gave up their 18th best prospect, according to MLB.com.
Right. I think that's a very low price, and I think that sets the market at a spot where, it's now a buyer's market for outfielders and a huge seller's market for pitchers. So that kind of creates an interesting contrast. But at the same time, I don't think teams who have guys who are controllable are really going to be rushing to trade outfielders before Monday.
Let's talk about another name that's sort of in the news right now, and that's Jonathan Lucroy of the Brewers. I've heard the Indians, Rangers, Mets, all teams that are linked to him. What is the current asking price that the Brewers are asking, and is there a front runner that seems interested enough to give that price up to get him?
The word that I got yesterday is that from the Mets, probably Darno and a top prospect wouldn't get it done. So that seems to show that there's a lot of teams interested. You know, I think a lot of teams could use a catcher. A lot of really interesting possibilities are out there, not just the ones we've heard in the Indians, the Rangers, and the Mets, and all 3 of those teams are involved there, but The Braves could look to make a move for a controllable catcher. The Astros could look to upgrade. I mean, Luke Roy is one of the best catchers in the league right now, a really good two-way player, who's an all-star this year. And every team could look to upgrade that position. So, you know, that's one where you can't really rule anyone out. I think it kind of – not to cut you off, but you have an interesting free agent market this year on the catching market. You know, obviously, Luke Roy's option is going to get picked up at just around $5 million, but you only have – you know, maybe Wilson Ramos and Matt Wieters. They have been good, but, you know, teams might be willing to basically add Luke Roy as a precursor to that offseason and get him on your club moving forward. And that, I think, puts the Braves and some other teams looking forward to next year on the radar for him.
So I don't want to go back and forth too much, but you mentioned the free agent market, and it spawned a question in my head. How much does the limited starting pitching that is available this winter really impact the type of activity we're seeing with teams be interested in the guys like Chris Sale or a Jose Quintana or a Sonny Gray? Does the limited choices in the market this winter mean teams really are starting to get a guy now for next year instead of getting a guy that can help them this year? Are they sort of doing their free agency now by making a trade instead of waiting until, let's say, December to sign a lesser-named guy?
I think definitely. I mean, I think the Pomeranz deal is an interesting example of that. It's the only big starter that's come off the board so far. But, you know, you have the Red Sox basically signing him to a two-and-a-half-year deal when they're going to – they obviously have rotation holes. And instead of looking at a market this year where you have your best pitcher being Rich Hill at 37 years old, you're going to have – Pomeranz, and that's basically, you know, a two-year cheap deal. Obviously, Espinosa's not cheap, but if we're talking money, it is. And I think that really sets up a seller's market in which you're looking at teams like Tampa Bay, for example, who basically have the whole world in front of them of offers. They have not just Archer, who they're not really willing to trade, but they can get a lot back for Matt Moore or Drew Smyly, and especially Jake Odorizzi, who a lot of teams really love. I'd be really, you know, shocked if all four of those Rays guys were still on the team by opening day next year, because I think it's just really smart for Tampa Bay, a team that has kind of offensively struggled for a couple years now, to really restock their system. If they're able to get Joey Gallo from the Rangers, which is a possibility for a guy like Archer, or for a guy, if they're able to swing an Odorizzi for Gallo-type deal, I think that would be an incredible haul for Tampa. And that seems like, in this market, not that crazy of a proposition. So I definitely think that teams are really setting up their free agency right now, and you'll see potentially a couple of controllable guys moved.
So let's talk about the Dodgers, who are chasing down Matt's Giants in the National League West. Sorry, Matt, had to get that in there. But this is a team that doesn't have Clayton Kershaw. They don't have Alex Wood now. They've really been banged up for most of the year, and now we're hearing that they're looking to make impact moves. You mentioned the rumor earlier that Julio Urias is potentially a piece that they're looking to put in a deal for a Chris Sale, maybe a Jose Quintana. What does the market say? Are they a team that is going to make that big splash, or are they a little bit more reserved, kind of going to hold on to their pieces, hope that they can get healthy, and that will be enough for them to overtake the Giants?
I don't think the Dodgers are ever reserved. So, I mean, you're looking at not just being in on Sale, but the Archer rumor is one that keeps popping up. There's a report that said the chances of them getting Archer, this was last week, are about 70%. And from what I've heard, a lot of people are taking the under on that number. So I don't know if it's that likely, but they're going to try to pry him away. You know, Andrew Friedman has that relationship with people in Tampa, working there for so long, and obviously loves Archer, loves Odorizzi. And I think those are some – I think the Rays and the Dodgers probably match up pretty well, whether it be those two guys or Matt Moore or maybe Smyly. But the Dodgers are looking to add starters no matter what. One name that's kind of popped up in the last couple days on them is James Shields, which I tweeted today. He's drawing some trade buzz. He's, you know, been pitching well in the last six starts, I think a 2.53 ERA in that span. People kind of wrote him off after how bad he was in his first few starts for the White Sox, but he's been good, and if the White Sox are looking to sell, you know, it's not a bad contract considering how much San Diego's picking up. So I think Los Angeles is really going to be aggressive, and it's just a tough time for them because it seems like there's no timetable on Kershaw, and you obviously have Wood and Anderson and Rue and all those guys still out. So that makes you almost wonder if they're not going to look at rentals just because of those injuries that have decimated that much them that much. But then you got to think, they're the Dodgers. They're always going to go for it, and I expect them to be in on things across the board.
When you mentioned James Shields, that reminded me. I saw this just 10 minutes ago on Twitter. It must have been. It was from Bleacher Nation, the Cubs blogger.
Mm-hmm.
He mentioned James Shields got a 2.10 ERA in his last five starts, but his FIP is 5.18. He's only striking out 12%, the guys that he's facing, but he's got a 208 BABIP working in his favor, which is insane because, as he points out later, he's got a 33.3% hard contact rate and an 8.1% soft contact rate. So it kind of seems like something's going to have to give with Shields in the next couple of starts. I can't imagine that you can keep that lineup for very long. So I would love for the Dodgers to acquire him. So if you could make that happen somehow, slip in the word, we'd greatly appreciate it here in SF.
I mean, that's where the pitching market is, though. I mean, you saw, three good starts out of Bud Norris turning into a couple good prospects for the Braves. I mean, Lucas Harrell, who's a minor league signee, is drawing interest for them. It's just, yeah, I wouldn't rule anything out at this point, even if he has been lucky.
Are we looking more at a trade deadline, you know, this Saturday, Sunday, into Monday, that is going to be very active? Or are we going to see, you know, a bunch of trades, a bunch of big names? Or is this going to be a very quiet market where we're going to hear a lot of rumblings, a lot of rumors, but when push comes to shove, come Monday, we're not going to see a lot of moves get made?
I think it could go either way. I mean, I think we've already seen Pomeranz is one of the best starters available, and he's already gone. Chapman's probably the best reliever, and he's already gone. So that sets that up. I mean, there is the chance for a blockbuster, whether it be Sale or Archer or Gray. And there is Carlos Gonzalez. Those are some blockbuster moves that would happen. I think we were just spoiled last year with Tulowitzki, Cueto, Price, Cespedes, and Hamels all going in the last 5 days, I think, before the deadline. So, but this year, it's a different market. It's one where there's not that starting pitching group available, and it really sets up teams to be able to float their really controllable good starters out there and just kind of see what they can get. And if one of those teams is motivated enough, then you'll see some blockbusters go down. But otherwise, it's going to be the names that we've seen. I mean, heading into this week, the guys that were most likely to be dealt imminently were Chapman, Upton, and Andrew Kashner. The first two are already off the board and kind of in a little bit of surprise moves. I think we all thought Upton was going to go to Baltimore, and we thought Chapman would have gone to probably Washington or Cleveland, but the Cubs and the Blue Jays stepped up and got their guys that they wanted, and now I think Kashner, pitching right now as we speak, he wasn't doing well early in the game. I haven't seen how it's gone since then, but he is probably one of the next guys to come off the board just because you have probably 11, 12 teams that are in on Kashner, which is really insane if you look at what he's done this year. But past that, it's just kind of a perfect storm of weird things that have happened. Rich Hill's blister kind of puts him on the shelf for a little bit, and maybe he won't get traded at this point. He looked like a sure guy to get dealt, obviously. And now, you know, Vizcaino with the Braves has been hurt, so you don't know if he's going to get moved. Trevor Plouffe was another guy, John Jay. All these guys are on the disabled list after being prime trade candidates. So we'll see where the market goes. I mean, it could go really either way. We could see almost nothing. We could see Chapman be the biggest deal of the whole thing, or we could see guys like Sale and Archer come off if those offers are big enough.
So I know Matt is really wondering about this, so Matt, I'm going to ask this on your behalf. Is Tim Lincecum drawing any trade interest for the Angels?
I would have to go with no on that one. I hope not.
Just had to get that little dig in there at Matt.
You have to mention Lincecum every time, right?
Yeah, he mentions Lincecum on every show, so I made sure that it was me this time, and I gave him a little insult.
But at the same time, Clay Buchholz is drawing interest, so that's just kind of shows you where things are.
Good, Matt. Would you like to respond to what I...
Well, I guess two things. At least Clay Buchholz can still throw over 90 miles per hour.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually going to drive to Houston on Sunday to go watch him start because it's only a 2.5-hour drive from me. And I was, you know, all getting ready to buy the tickets. And then I found out that a baseball league I had signed up for had a tryout, and it happened to be on Sunday at 10:30 in the morning. So I couldn't make it, and I was pretty bummed out about it. But then when I got home and turned on the game, I was pretty glad I didn't drive make a 5-hour round trip to see him get shelled and knocked out of the game by the second inning.
All right, so to close the show here, a very short episode this week, but there's a lot of information in here, so I think a short, jam-packed, filled episode is exactly what you guys need to get you through the rest of the week with the trade rumors. So, Chris, you're going to have the final word here. Sum it up for me. What, in your mind, based on what you're hearing and seeing, is going to be the sort of stone that turns that gets this whole wheel moving and gets the trade market going?
It's going to be one of these rental starters coming off, and again, they're not the sexiest names, but it's going to be, I think, Cashner or Hellickson or Nova or one of these guys, and that will just kind of fill. I think you'll see like teams like Baltimore and Miami, teams with really weak farm systems, step up, maybe get Cashner. One of those teams are in on Cashner for sure. I think the Marlins are in on Nova as well. You see them kind of step up, get those people, get those. It just has the best options they can get with their farm system. And then that will start moving the market to where the Dodgers, the Rangers, teams with some pieces to move will really start going for sale, going for Archer. And that's where the real fun could be over the weekend.
Matt, anything you want to add before I wrap it up and get us out of here?
We already got the Lincecum thing. Yeah. I guess I would have one quick question.
Sure,
if
go
the
ahead.
Giants were only going to make one move, it would be for a reliever probably, I guess. It was a question, and then it turned into me guessing and asking you if I was right.
I think you're right, yeah.
Okay.
There you go, Matt. You got all your wisdom. Now, I would ask if the Mets are getting Lucroy, but I know that the answer to that is no. They're just not giving up that sort of price. So, all right, wrap it up here. As always, guys, you can listen to this show in a various of different ways. iTunes is probably the easiest. You go on there, you search the Roster Rhetorical. If you spell it right, unlike me, it'll come up. You can hit subscribe, and you get all the episodes downloaded as they come out. We're up to 39 now, so they come out fast and furious here. If you don't have iTunes or you're an Android user, any podcasting app will work. I've used Podcast Republic in the past, Pocket Casts, any of them. You search it there, it comes up there as well. If you're someone who likes to listen while you're at work on your computer or your desktop, at the bottom of every article at MLB Daily Dish, the player is there with the latest edition of the show. Or you can go to our Blog Talk Radio page, the Roster Rhetorical there as well, and you can find us there. If you want to follow, and if there's one person you're going to follow that you don't follow already, it is Chris Cotillo for this week especially. Chris, it is at Chris Cotillo, right?
Yep.
Okay, so if you follow him at Chris Cotillo, every sort of piece of breaking news will come from him. Definitely somebody you want to follow as the week goes on. If you want to follow myself, at Chris R. Schubert, and then Matt is at The Original Bull, and he tweets about the Giants and space things, which is probably one of the favorite things that I see in my Twitter feed. But Chris, thank you again for taking time. I know you're busy, I know you're sick, but thank you for taking a half an hour out of your day to hang out with us and get everyone ready for the trade deadline.
Anytime. It's the most wonderful time of the year, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, guys, we'll be back next week. Hopefully not too much happens, or maybe we hope that a lot of stuff happens, so we have a lot to talk about next week. Either way, we'll see you guys next time.